Hi, this is Peter Sagal. Due to an appalling lack of stupidity by public figures this week, we are airing our special family-themed Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me that was recorded in Pasadena, California last year. And please, if you know any celebrities, politicians, dumb bank robbers, kindly have them behave like idiots before next week's show.
From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Pasadena Civic Auditorium in Pasadena, California, Peter Sagal.
Thank you all. Thank you, Carl. Yeah. Yeah, it's that kind of day. I share your excitement. We have a special show for you this week. You know, the news, it comes, the news goes, but what endures week to week? Family endures. Family is permanent, as is their ability to drive you nuts. So that is our theme this week. Families of all kinds. Plus, George Takei will be by to play Not My Job. But as always, you can acquire a family heirloom, Carl's voice, on your home answering machine. Give us a call, the number, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, I'm Natalie Tippett from Salt Lake City, Utah.
Hey, Natalie, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I am fine. Salt Lake City is just one of the most beautiful places I know of. What do you do there?
I work for the University of Utah, and I'm a graduate student there as well.
Oh, really? You're at the University of Utah?
Mm-hmm.
Which is sort of up there in the hills, looking down in so many ways on the rest of the Salt Lake Valley.
Yes, we like to think highly of ourselves.
I know you do. Well, welcome to the show, Natalie. Now, let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to a television personality and a contributor to CBS Sunday Morning, Mr. Mo Rocca.
Hello, Mo.
Hi, Natalie.
Next, it's one of the women behind the Washington Post's reliable source column, is Roxanne Roberts.
Hello. Hi, Natalie.
Finally, say hello to a writer for HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher, Mr. Adam Felber.
Hey, Natalie.
Natalie, you're going to play Who's Carl this time. Carl Castle, as he always does, is going to start with three quotes. But this time, it's going to be three quotations from famous siblings.
Oh, boy.
I know. But this is going to be fine. If you can correctly identify or explain just two of these people or siblings, you'll win our prize, Carl Castle's voice on your home answering machine.
Okay.
You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Now, your first quote is actually on a nameplate on a desk in a White House office.
Undersecretary for Go Bleep Yourself.
Now, that is not this man's official position in the Obama administration. It does go a long way to describe what person?
Oh, can you give me a hint?
Well, you know, President Obama is very polite, so when he needs to swear at somebody, he brings in this guy.
Oh, Rahm Emanuel.
Rahm Emanuel, very good. Now, the White House Chief of Staff is famous for his filthy mouth, and this, it turns out, is kind of a tradition in his remarkably accomplished family. Rahm says, quote, "In our house, swearing is a term of affection," which is okay for him. He's in politics. And for his brother, Ari Emanuel, he's a very powerful Hollywood agent. But it's a little problematic for his brother, Ezekiel Emanuel. He is a leading medical ethicist who specializes in end-of-life care. Thus, Ezekiel Emanuel's book, Look, You're Gonna Bleep and Die.
You know, all the Emanuel brothers, Rahm, Ezekiel, Ari, they can swear it up, but I hear around the dinner table, the absolute filthiest is Zeppo.
Well, it turns out there are, I mean, this is an amazing family. Three sons, three extraordinary careers, very famous. Two of them have inspired TV characters. There are other members, less well known as members of the family. For example, their half-brother, Brett Favre, originally named Chaim Emanuel. He's done well in football. And then there was their kid sister, Miley Emanuel.
Now, do you think that at Passover, even Elijah curses?
Yeah. What Passover at the Emanuel House? Why is this bleeping night so bleeped up? Really? All right. Here is your next quote. It's from another political sibling. He's speaking now in 1993.
I'm in this world now, this ethical zone, where everything has to be ethical. And some ethical things are unethical. You know, it's really crazy.
Who thought it was just crazy, ethically speaking, to be the president's half-brother?
I have a CD of his.
Do you really? But hang on, let's see if Natalie can get it. He is a musician. That's one of his many activities.
He's a musician.
1993.
So.
Arkansas.
Oh, Bill Clinton?
Bill, no.
His brother. Oh.
His brother? Remember his name?
No, I don't. I was in eighth grade.
Oh.
That wouldn't have stopped him.
No, actually, it was
Ryan Fitzdodger.
It was Roger Clinton. Roger, remember Roger Clinton? Everybody nostalgic for the days of Billy Carter was thrilled to see Bill Clinton's presidential limo followed to the White House by a convicted Coke dealer driving a motorized beer cooler. Roger, now, he could have gone the classic route, you know, instead of Billy Beer, maybe Clinton Country Crack Pipes. But he decided, after his ethical musings, to stay classy. He started an acting career in the 90s, playing such roles, really, as the Southern Mayor Bubba in Pumpkinhead 2, Blood Wings.
Underrated.
Absolutely. Yeah. But here's the amazing thing. For all this guy's flaws and his shamelessness, for a few glorious months in the second term, he was the less embarrassing Clinton brother. All right, Natalie, you're one for two. If you get this last one, though, you'll win our prize.
Okay.
Here is your last quote.
She's just like a kid who beats a dog until somebody looks, and then she starts petting it.
That quote came from advice columnist Ann Landers. She was talking about her sister. Who was her sister?
Oh, it's on the tip of my tongue.
You're on the tip of your tongue? Well, I'll give you a hint. Is also an advice columnist.
Yeah.
Can I give her...
Oh, it's right there.
Dear...
Rhymes with flabby.
Abby Landers.
Dear Abby. Yep. That was Ann Landers describing her sister, Abigail Van Buren, or Dear Abby. So it was like... Dear Ann Landers, my twin sister and I were really close, but then we went into the same line of work, and now we hate each other. What do I do? Signed, Abby. Dear Abby, bite me. Twin sisters Esther and Pauline Friedman became the two most famous advice columnists in America. But for years, they couldn't solve their own family dispute. The rival advice columnists sniped at each other in the press, but they never spoke in person until they reconciled in the mid-60s. Maybe. Because Dear Abby's daughter wrote a column in Ann Landers' memory when Landers died, but Landers' daughter said Abby's daughter just did that for the money. So it continued, you know, and then the two women started the Yo Mama jokes. You know. Mm.
And this is why print is dying. No,
Your mama would send an alcoholic to a distillery. Your mama would tell John McCain to go to Alaska. Carl, how did Natalie do in our quiz?
Natalie had two correct answers, Peter, so I'll be doing the message on her home answering machine.
Well done. And thanks so much for playing.
Oh, thank you.
Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions. All of your questions right now will be about family business or family businesses. Mo, you've heard stories about families in the entertainment industry, not good stories. Well, here's another one. One leader of a family troupe was apparently prone to volcanic rages and constantly abused and heckled her performing children. Who was it?
She constantly abused her performing... children. It
yes.
could not have been Mrs. Partridge.
No.
This is a real person.
Oh,
well, I mean, is it Mama Rose? Are we going?
No.
Okay.
No.
So it's a woman.
This isn't
with a
her image, and yet it seems to be the truth.
Donna Reed. No. Give me a clue.
Well, how do you solve a problem like her?
Oh, I cannot believe that Maria von Trapp.
Maria von Trapp. Apparently, remember the lovely novice nun and the governess Maria from The Sound of Music? Well, flying off the handle and screaming at the children, these apparently were a few of her favorite things. In an interview in 2003, one of the real Von Trapp children described her as, quote, like a thunderstorm. She was prone to slamming doors and screaming and throwing things. Rodgers and Hammerstein softened her character after failing to sell the far more realistic version of the musical called The Sound of Yelling.
That's just awful.
It's, well, you know. It could have been more interesting that way.
But the Baroness was a real horrible person. They're lucky they didn't end up with her.
In real life, though, who knows? Maybe she
would have been really nice.
The Baroness was probably really sweet.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Yikes. Maria the nun sweeps in. Just so happens to not be a nun anymore.
This is
you
a great...
think she had
okay.
a wooden ruler?
Absolutely. Yeah,
all right, I'm heading to the Writers Guild right after this to register it.
I know. Yeah, you can write new songs like, so long, farewell, and for the last time, get in your room.
Doh is what the children would utter after being slapped.
Doh!
It was not a female deer.
Doh, a cry of pain.
Fa is where I'm gonna run.
The hills are alive with the sound of music. With song...
Thank you so much. Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game on the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Peter, my name is Gregory Langlois. Hi, how do you do?
I'm doing fine, Gregory. How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
That's good. And
I'm extremely excited.
I can tell.
Really.
Well, welcome to the show, Greg.
Yeah, thanks.
Now, you're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Greg's topic?
The Hetfields and McCoy's got nothing on us.
Family feuds are the stuff of classic Russian novels, great game shows. So in keeping with this week's theme, our panelists are going to tell you three stories about the dark side of family, the fights. Choose the true story of a family at war, and you'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine or voicemail. Ready to go?
Yeah, sounds very dramatic.
It is. It's pretty dramatic. Let's hear first from Adam Felber.
Back in the 40s, Germany's Dassler brothers had it all. They ran a successful shoe business together, lived together. Heck, they'd even joined the Nazi party together. But their fairy tale story came to an end in 1948 when a fight broke out between them and a livid Rudolf Dassler abruptly moved out, moved across the Oric River, and set up a rival shoe business. Adolf Adi Dassler renamed his company Adidas, while rebellious Rudolf christened his Puma. And in the ensuing decades, sleepy Herzog in Oric became a town where an Adidas man dared not show his face in a Puma restaurant, and vice versa. It was like Der Sharks and Das Jets, but with much less shiny, more ergonomic footwear. Well, just this September, the feud came to an official end as the new heads of the company shook hands to mark World Peace Day. But it came too late for Adolf and Rudolf, who died 30 years ago and are now buried in the same graveyard, on opposite ends, of course, but for their mourners, just a quick jog.
A vicious fight leads to lifelong separation and the creation of Adidas and its rival Puma. Your next story of strains in the family ties comes from Roxanne Roberts.
Britain's West family owned what they always thought was a bad parody of Jane Eyre. A bad, very valuable parody, as it turned out, when they took it to Antique Roadshow this spring. Handwriting experts authenticated the 19th century manuscript as an undiscovered work of Emily Bronte, a snarky, intentionally bad version of her older sister's novel. Titled Jane Eyress, the story follows a fat, lazy aristocrat who takes a job as a governess to steal her sister's husband. Bronte scholars, of course, are in an uproar. This completely changes the perception of Emily as a gentle, loving sister to Charlotte, historian Edward Thornton told London's Guardian. I had no idea she was such a, well, rhymes with witch.
Emily Bronte parodies her sister's work in a newly discovered manuscript. Your last story of familial relations not relating so well comes from Mo Rocca.
Actor Steve Guttenberg and his brother Dak were closer than frickin' frack growing up. But when the Berlin Wall fell 20 years ago, another wall went up between the two brothers. It was then that the printing press invented by their great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather, Johannes Gutenberg, was released by the formerly communist state to the sole surviving heirs, Steve and Dak. Steve Gutenberg was appropriately awed. The development of movable type was a revolutionary improvement over the handwritten manuscript, rightly considered a key factor in the European Renaissance, he said. Dak's take, meanwhile, yeah, old Joe was a crafty SOB, left us the gift that keeps on giving. While Steve wanted to donate the press to the Smithsonian, Dak wanted to, quote, soup this thing up, electrify it, start printing some of them Gutenberg Bibles. Printing press? More like printing money. Sorry, some of us don't have the luxury of sitting around counting our three men and a baby residuals all day. And so the fate of the printing press is frozen in litigation.
All right. Which of these is the real story of a family feud? From Adam Felber, how a fight between brothers who ran a shoe company together led to the creation of Adidas and Puma and how they never spoke to each other. From Roxanne Roberts, how a recently discovered manuscript shows that Emily Brontë didn't think much of her sister Charlotte's work. Or from Mo Rocca, the Gutenberg brothers today deal with the legacy of the Gutenbergs of yesteryear. Which of these is the real story of a family feud?
I am a big soccer fan, though. I love shoes.
Right.
So I think I'm gonna have to decide.
They like
first
it.
One.
You're gonna go with the first one.
Yeah.
The audience approves. All right. Well, we spoke to someone who knows intimately the history of this particular feud.
For many decades, this little town had been divided between Adidas and Puma employees because the companies were founded by rival brothers.
You were right. That, of course, was Barbara Smith. She's the author of Sneaker Wars, the enemy brothers who founded Adidas and Puma and the family feud that forever changed the business of sports. She was, of course, talking about the great feud that split a town and founded two companies. You were correct. Adam had the right answer. You picked it. You win Carl's voice in your home answering machine. Well done, Greg.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for playing with us today.
Thank you very much. I had a great time.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And now the game where distinguished people try to distinguish themselves even further by playing Not My Job. Our guest this week is best known for his portrayal of Mr. Sulu in the classic Star Trek series and to a later generation of nerds as Hero's dad on Heroes. We got nerds of all kinds here, so we are very excited to have him. George Takei, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you. Now, some of the people in the cast who became famous from the original Star Trek, Leonard Nimoy, Bill Shatner to a certain extent, spent portions of their post-Star Trek career trying to run away from it, not wanting to be typecast. Did you ever go through that? Did you ever get tired of dorks like me coming up to you and, Mr. Sulu?
No, I didn't get tired of that part because, you know, they're the ones that made Star Trek so popular and so long-lived. However, there are producers and directors and casting people who are not very imaginative. And they can't see you in any character outside of Sulu.
Right.
And so there was a time when I found it very difficult to get cast. So I decided, well, I'm not going to fight it. I'm going to go into public service. And I served for 11 years on the Southern California Rapid Transit District Board of Directors.
Yeah, and you got into politics, but you didn't get in any of these big, you know, political causes. You actually got into nitty-gritty retail public service administration. You were actually getting things done.
The cause that Mayor Bradley, who appointed me to the board,
Tom Bradley, mayor of L.A. for many years.
That's right. He said, we need to get started on a subway system here.
Right.
And we need someone to steer it.
I come with experience.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right. Got lots of time. Tom Bradley just like saying, full speed ahead, Mr. Sulu. Anyway, but go on.
So we did have a cause, a mission, and that was to get started on building a subway system. And so we got the half-cent sales tax passed. We went to Washington to get the federal match.
Well, wait a minute. Stop right there. So you're doing very important work, very complicated work. When you go to Washington to get, you know, federal legislation passed, so L.A. can build a subway system or have preliminary planning, didn't you have the problem of all the congressmen going, hey, it's Mr. Sulu?
I mean,
did you, were you able to leverage that to your advantage?
Absolutely. I'm shameless. Yeah. I used everything. Right. I went on those lobbying trips with a satchel full of Sulu photographs.
Really?
And, you know, autograph them. And,
each one goes for $10 million of federal funds. I wanted to ask you this, because this is a family show, our theme. Our family theme. You know, it's not good for families. Don't play it for your family. But it's... we're talking about families, and I wanted to ask you about your family. You got married this year in that brief, odd window when same-sex marriage was legal in California. Did the whole crew, the whole crew of the Enterprise show up for your wedding? Did you have your friends and family from that time?
No. Bill Shatner.
Really?
Was the only one who didn't
do
respond.
Tell.
He couldn't.
We invited everybody. Yeah. You know, our best man was Walter Koenig, who was
Chekhov. Ensign Chekhov.
And she didn't like the word matron, so we called her best lady. Nichelle Nichols was our best lady. Uhura.
Yeah.
Bill, you know, we don't have the best of relations, but we wanted to be inclusive and invite all our friends. He never responded.
Oh, well, I heard his excuse. It was absurd. He said he couldn't find a cheap airfare. that's just ridiculous. Oh, can I just say, I feel a little left out because I'm actually not a Star Trek geek.
You're not.
I'm not, but I am a rapid transit
geek.
You
sound like one.
I'm not a Star Trek geek. I'm just mistaken for one constantly. No, but I am a rapid transit geek, and I just wanted to know, is there any future in the monorail?
Here in Los Angeles?
Just anywhere. I love them.
And, you do?
Yeah.
What we're doing here in Los Angeles is building a network of light rail, because that's less costly, and putting the focus on extending the stub-ended Wilshire line.
Is this what other people
extend that to?
Is this what other people feel like when we're talking about Star Trek?
Yeah,
I love this.
I know. I'm like, blahdy, blahdy, blah. Yeah.
Sorry about that.
It's all right.
You just don't get it. We have conventions. This is awesome.
You'll dress up as conductors.
As a matter of fact,
if the purple line is going to be powered by dilithium, then
dilithium crystals.
Yes,
I feel like I did a Star Trek convention right here in this room, and I feel like I'm doing one again.
It's kind of like that. Well, George Takei, we obviously are really excited to have you here, and we have invited you here to play a game we're calling
Push, Push. Come on, Push.
The theme of the week, family. Families usually begin with somebody getting born, so people have been giving birth to people have been getting birth to other people for millennia. It was only recently that modern science, began to bear on the problem. We're going to ask you three questions about modern childbirth. Get two right, you'll win a prize for one of our listeners. Carl, who is George Takei playing for?
George is playing for Clara Aronovich of Los Angeles, California.
You ready to play? All right. First question, there's a childbirth educator in Australia, and she recently discovered that her classes would be more attractive to men if she did what? If she A, held them in pubs, if she B, built a model of the womb out of chicken wings, or C, taught the classes in the nude?
I think the third one.
The third one. Taught the class in the nude. You know man. So your choice is she taught the classes in the nude.
Yeah, am I
men
right?
Men lined up. No, I'm afraid you were wrong. It was actually in pubs. She taught her childbirth classes
in
pubs.
Well, that was my second choice.
Yeah, I'm sure. You're at these pub-based birthing classes in Australia, dads-to-be learn about birthing techniques, etiquette, and where the pub is so they can flee to it. All right, you still have two more chances. Next question. A leading French obstetrician claims that contrary to conventional wisdom, the ideal birth environment involves no what? A, crying, B, men, or C, babies?
You're allowed to ask advice from Roxanne. She's the only person here that had another person come at her.
I would say that men, for the most part, are not particularly helpful in
but they're usually there to help their
wives.
No,
this is a relatively recent innovation. I'd be tempted to go with the no men thing.
Well, I think men are necessary.
You think men are necessary?
Yes. If I'm wrong, I'm going to go down and flame.
Yes. So you're going to choose.
What was that? You're going to go down what?
Let me just summarize. I'm just going to summarize here. George, you're going to go down flaming because you think men are necessary.
Yes.
That's where we are with this.
You really think I should change my answer?
I'll go with the advice that I got from the only person here that's had that experience. I'll say men.
You're right! Yeah. Now, she explains that this obstetrician says that men aren't good in the birth environment because they stress the woman. Throw out their hormonal balance.
Huh.
Also, the men tend to run away to the pub. All right, so last question. A British think tank has suggested that all women should be entitled to maternity leave from their jobs, even if A, they don't have a job, B, they don't have children, or C, they really, really don't want to go.
C. I think
you're gonna go there. They should C is even if they really, really don't want to go, they'd be forced into it.
I think so.
That's, you think that's the one? That's
Back to go back to the
Do I can I get consulting
you
service?
May.
Yes. Does he need consulting?
Yes, there is one possibility,
which is that one thing that's been a point of contention is that women who don't have children and who work don't get time off that's paid to be able to pursue other things. So there is that to think about.
That's a very reason. That's a very well solid reason. Case.
It's very.
So, what's your choice going to be?
B. If they don't have a child,
is that your choice?
I mean, no, it doesn't make sense.
This is the first time he's hearing this.
All right. At a certain point, you have to let a man steer his own ship. So
I am steady. I'm sticking with my original answer, C.
And that is brave, and it is wonderful, and it is wrong.
Wrong.
It's wrong, right? Yeah.
Well, why would a woman with no child?
Well, it's as what Roxanne said, they felt that women should get the extra unpaid leave even if they don't choose to have children. That was the suggestion.
But it's called a maternity leave, right?
Yes.
We didn't say it was a good suggestion.
Yeah. I just want to say I'm a little shocked because I remember when Captain Kirk said, go there, you said, yes, sir. There was none of this. But why do we want to go there, Captain? How did George Takei do in our quiz?
Well,
terribly. Terribly.
George needed at least two correct answers to win. He had just one correct.
Well, I apologize to the person that I was the surrogate for.
But there is... Yes.
It's so sad. That poor woman's in her third trimester.
With no child.
There are... George Takei is an actor and a public servant and a gentleman and one of my heroes. What a pleasure to have you with us. George Takei, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks, everybody. In just a minute, Carl stars in Star Trek Episode 7, The Naked Rhyme. It's a wedding-themed listener limerick challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you. This round is all about family problems. Mo.
Yes.
In Japan, a new business is catering to those who don't have family or just don't like the family they have. What is this business?
Is it robot families?
No, not
like
robot
that?
Families.
Well, the Japanese love Hello Kitty. I'm just, can you give me a clue? Is it like...
It's like a geisha, but they just irritate you.
Oh, so are they kind of like geishas that are irritating? Are they like stalker geishas or...
They're a backup geishas.
Geisharazzi.
The geisha is just an example of it's not the geisha per se. It's what is it? What can you do with a geisha that's clean?
You can accept her tea ceremony. No. You can
How
let
do
her
you get a geisha?
You get a geisha by buying one. You pay one. You rent a geisha.
You rent a geisha. Yeah. So instead of renting a geisha,
you rent a family.
Exactly right. You know, trying to get you to the right answer is like playing charades, except we're talking, Mo.
Water.
Wow.
All right, Mo, what we're thinking of is three words, and it's rent a family. Go.
It's hyphenated. That's one word.
Yes.
So okay, I'm going to give you another hint. It's rent a family.
The company that will rent you family members is called Hagamashi Tai. In English, I Want to Cheer Up Limited. The company offers relatives for any occasion with a variety of options. For example, you can rent a standard mother. You can upgrade to the stepmother who will shower you with gifts in a pathetic attempt to buy your love. And let's say you rented an uncle for your wedding and the party starts to drag. You can get an on-the-spot instant upgrade to creepy uncle.
Mm. Oh, nice.
And there are a lot of rentable mother-in-laws just languishing, waiting probably.
Adam, the Wall Street Journal reports that as baby boomers become grandmas and grandpas, they are unhappy with what?
The quality of music festivals available to them. It's not like it was, man.
No.
The baby boomers are becoming grandparents, and they're disappointed with the quality of...
No, they don't like something.
They don't
they're
like
grandmas
something.
And grandpas, but they don't like...
Being called grandma and grandpa.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
They don't like it. Those who were once known as Bubby, Zadie, Granny, Granddad have new handles these days. Lefty, Sheriff, and Glamma.
Oh, Glamma instead of Grandma?
Oh, that's horrible.
Baby boomers are,
no,
are
no.
Now, no, baby
Not
boomers
really.
Are now aging into the roles of grandparents, but they're still clutching onto their youth with their bony, mottled, liver-spotted hands. One boomer tells the Journal, quote, I don't see myself as a booby. That's someone from the old country who has an accent, looks frumpy. She then adjusted her hot pants, chugged an Ensure Cosmo, and shuffled away in her juicy couture walker.
That's an Insurtini. That's horrible.
Baby boomers are going to become grandparents at an older age than many other generations because they had their kids later.
Exactly.
So, in fact, their grandparents at ages, you know, other generations, people were grandparents at 50, and they're not going to be grandparents till 60 or 70. So I don't know why they're whining, frankly.
Well, it's got to be weird to look at a child and not know if that's your grandchild or a flashback. I'm totally seeing a baby. Anybody else here seeing a baby?
Everybody's like, yes, Neil.
Because I'm totally seeing a baby.
Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can also go to our website at waitwait.npr.org, where you can find out about attending our live shows most weeks back at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago. Or if you prefer to get your entertainment at home, you can check out cat videos on our blog. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, it's Laura. I'm in Kodiak, Alaska.
Hey, Kodiak, Alaska?
That's right.
Gosh, we get a few callers from Alaska. How are things there?
Getting to be winter.
Getting to be winter. What do you do there?
I'm a chiropractor.
You're a chiropractor?
I am.
Is there much call for chiropractic in Alaska?
There is, actually.
People get hurt.
I work in the biggest fishing harbor in Alaska. So there's a big fishing industry here, and... Then all of the industries that support them.
Yes, and all those fish have spines that need to be aligned. Laura, welcome to the show. Carl Castle is going to read you three limericks all about weddings with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly, and two of the limericks will be a winner. Ready to play?
Let's go.
All right, here's your first limerick.
Some brides make inflated requests of us bridesmaids far more than the guests. We get sent to the spa and are handed a bra and are told to all get matching...
dress.
Say that again?
Dress.
Dresses?
Dresses.
Well, I'm sure they often get that request, but we would probably not go and write a limerick about it.
Oh, this is,
yes, breasts. Oh, that's right, breasts. There's no point putting matching dresses on bridesmaids if the bridesmaids themselves don't match, right? So how about some plastic surgery, Botox, and boob jobs are the latest bridal shower events, with one Beverly Hills surgeon saying his business has gone up by 40% since he started offering bridal beauty buffets, which bridesmaids come in as a group to get brows smoothed, fat suctioned off, replaced elsewhere. Best part is, if you have a falling out with any one of your bridesmaids, you'll have a choice of identical people to replace her. Here's your next limerick.
It's a bad choice, love, my new wife groans. Is that under my thumb, he intones? No, I don't think that Mick gives our wedding a kick. Don't waste £5 million on the...
Mick?
Mick.
Somebody named Mick? Groans, stones.
Don't.
I could give it to you. I already kind of did.
Did you? Oh, please
what did you,
give
hold
us...
Hold on, hold on. What did you say?
I said phones.
You didn't say phones, no. No, the answer is stones, as in the Rolling Stones.
Mick.
Yeah, Mick.
Okay.
The world's greatest rock and roll band, registered trademark, doesn't want you to know they're available to do weddings until you have the $10 million on hand to pay them for it. But if you're in a budget and you don't really want your first dance as a couple to be I Can't Get No Satisfaction... $2 million will get you Amy Winehouse. It's true, although with that booking...
$2 million,
although with that booking, there can be hidden fees, especially if you go with the open bar. All right, now, if you get this last one, with no help from me, if you get this last one, you'll still win. Here we go. Here's your last limerick.
Yeah, I'm in the wedding. It's great. Till then, I just poke at my plate. Though meals are inviting, I put it in writing that I will not gain any...
Wait.
Right! Very good. According to a survey in Britain, 20% of brides are in favor of bridesmaid contracts, prenuptial contracts that make your bridesmaids legally culpable if they put on weight, drink too much at the reception, or hit on the groom. The idea may be a big hit with brides, but bridesmaids are less receptive. Trudy Dixon, the director of Brides Bootcamp, said, quote, I've been a bridesmaid several times, and if I was presented with a contract, I would suggest they find another friend to do the job.
Aren't these conflicting messages?
Yeah.
Don't lose any weight. Now get some implants.
Exactly. Well, we want you to look your best. Mm. Carl, how did Laura do in our quiz?
Well, Laura had 2 correct answers, Peter, and that's enough to win our prize.
Well done. Congratulations. Thanks for playing. Now, on to our final game, Lightning Fill-in-the-Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer is worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Peter, we have a rarity. We have a 3-way tie
for first place.
Oh, Adam Felber, Roxanne Roberts, Mo Rocca each has 3 points.
This is very interesting.
We have arbitrarily decided that, Roxanne, you're going to go first. Your round of questions are all about... the modern British royal family. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. The current British royals are members of the House of blank.
Windsor.
Right. King Edward VIII shocked the empire when he blanked so he could marry divorcee Wallis Simpson.
Abdicated.
Right. Before her engagement to the Prince of Wales, blank was living with 3 roommates and was working as a kindergarten assistant.
Diana Spencer.
Right. Queen Elizabeth II of Great Britain is a known dog lover who keeps at least 4 blanks in her retinue at all times.
Corgis.
Right. In 1987, Prince Edward, Princess Anne, and the Duke and Duchess of York appeared in a televised charity event in which they blanked.
I think they ran a race.
No, they dressed as vegetables and threw hams at each other. Prince Harry attracted the attention of the tabloids when he was photographed at a costume party dressed as a blank.
Nazi.
Right. The once plump Sarah Ferguson, Duchess of York, became a spokesperson for blank.
Weight Watchers.
Right. Princess Margaret, the Queen's younger sister, insists that everyone address her as ma'am, except for her closest friends, who were generously permitted to call her blank.
Her Highness.
No, they were generously permitted to call her ma'am, darling.
Oh.
Margaret, Queen Elizabeth's sister, was the Princess Diana of her time. She first staged a glamorous royal wedding and then proceeded to have glamorous royal affairs. Although she was known for her partying ways, she was thoroughly scandalized if other people ignored royal protocol. She even insisted her own children and husband address her as Princess Margaret.
Ma'am, darling?
Ma'am, darling. Oh, ma'am, darling.
Who?
That's what they say. Wow, Carl, how did Roxanne do in our quiz?
Roxanne had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. She now has 15 points, and Roxanne has the lead.
Yeah, I'll give it up.
I would have done really well in that round.
Me too.
I know the royals.
Did you know the ham?
I know.
I didn't know the ham.
I didn't know the ham.
No, I would have guessed it, but...
All right, Adam, you're up next. All of your questions are about fictional families. Fill in the blank. A man with 3 sons marries a woman with 3 daughters in the classic sitcom blank.
The Brady Bunch.
Right. Louisa May Alcott's novel about the March family blank is loosely based on her experiences growing up with 3 sisters.
Little Women.
Right. Best known for their groovy songs and wardrobe, the blank family toured the country in a bus.
Partridge.
Right. Michael J. Fox's big break came when he was cast as Alex P. Keaton on the show blank.
Family Ties.
Right. In the movie The Shining, the scene in which Jack Nicholson chases his son through the hedge maze took a month to shoot in part because blank.
It wasn't snowing enough.
No, because the crew members on the set kept getting lost in the maze. Each episode of the family drama blank ended with the family saying goodnight to each other.
At least the Waltons.
Yes. Al Lewis, best known as Grandpa on the sitcom blank, ran for the New York Senate seat in the late 90s.
The Munsters.
Right. Growing Pains, a sitcom about a family on Long Island, aired under a number of names all over the world, including in Latin America, blank.
El Pains Loco.
Ouch. How Painful Is Growing Up is the name of the show. Growing Pains. Other countries gave...
Isn't that what I said in Spanish?
It is, not quite. Other countries gave the series equally snappy titles. In Italy, the show was called Parents in Blue Jeans. In Sweden, it was Dad Knows Best. In Germany, it was Our Loud Home. Carl, how did Adam do in our quiz?
Adam had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. Right. He now has tied Roxanne Roberts with 15 points.
And I now... I'll fix this because I know that all my questions are about the Rocca family.
What an amazing coincidence that you got this one. No, how many then does Mo need to win?
Well, 6 to tie, 7 to win outright.
All right. So, Mo, all of your questions are about parenting. Again, fill in the blank. With his book Baby and Child Care, pediatrician blank became a parenting guru.
Benjamin Spock. Right.
The parents in the movie Home Alone were horrified when they realized they'd gone on vacation without their son, played by blank.
Macaulay Culkin.
Right. Joan Crawford's parenting skills came under fire in her daughter Christina's book and subsequent movie blank.
Mommy Dearest.
Right. Woody Allen took himself off the list of ideal father figures when he married
Suni
Mia Farrow's blank.
Mia Farrow's adopted daughter.
Right.
Yeah.
Police in Rhode Island were able to track down 2 teens suspected of breaking and entering into a home because they blanked.
Because they had a baby and left it there.
No, because they left their homework at the scene. In addition to their 3 biological children, Hollywood couple blank and blank have adopted 3 children from Africa and Cambodia.
Well, that would be Brangelina.
Right, Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt. Yeah. Well, one of the most frequently banned books is Entango Makes 3, a picture book about 2 male blanks raising a baby.
Oh, were they... monkeys?
They were penguins, saying he didn't want to ruin his son's political career. An Ohio man declined to press charges after a dispute over his son's failure to blank.
It's got to be something unusual. You
want to get George Takei out here and discuss it? Because you guys...
No, it's his son's failure...
To...
It's his son's failure to be weaned.
His son's failure to clean his room.
Okay.
28-year-old Andrew Mietzak, political consultant and school board member, threw a monstrous tantrum when his parents told him to clean his room in their basement. There were tears, food was thrown, and Misak's dad called 911. Then he had second thoughts and decided to put his son's political fortunes first. After all, the temperamental slacker is already in the shortlist to be the next Republican vice presidential nominee.
Carl,
Carl, did Mo do well enough to win?
Well, Mo needed at least 6 to tie, but Mo had just 5 correct answers. So
wow.
Adam Felber and Roxanne Roberts were co-champions.
Congratulations. In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists to predict what will be the next big fad in parenting. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations. And LendingTree, providing up to 4 loan offers from a network of lenders. Learn more at LendingTree.com or 800-555-TREE. CSX, whose trains move a ton of freight nearly 500 miles on 1 gallon of fuel to help reduce fuel consumption. CSX, how tomorrow moves. And Public Notice, an independent organization dedicated to reducing government spending. Learn more at thepublicnotice.org. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Gotica writes our limericks. Our web guru is Beth Novi. BJ Litterman composed our theme. Special thanks this week to Tricia McKinney. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Waltrover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. Thanks to Patrick Murray of NPR and Rick Barr and the crew at the Pasadena Civic Auditorium. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mike Danforth. Now, panel, what will be the next big fad in parenting? Adam Felber.
It's a method where parents do a weekly review of their kids' performance in a glitzy panel setting. It's called Childhood Idol.
Roxanne Roberts.
You've heard of helicopter parents and balloon boy? The next high-flying fad? Put the baby in a capsule, shoot it into space, and let it come back in about, 18 years.
And Mo Rata.
Get your baby delivered by a midwife from the cast of Star Trek.
And if any of those happen, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also, Mo Rata, Adam Felber, Roxanne Roberts. Thanks to our fabulous audience here at the Pasadena Civic Auditorium. We will see you, good people, next week. This is NPR.